This week on the Boag World Show, we go north of the border to talk about microsites and look at how one charity saved millions. Welcome to BoagWorld.com, the podcast for those involved in designing, developing and running websites on a daily basis. My name's Paul and joining me is Marcus, and we're not going to talk about the weather or health.
Well, that's what we always... nothing else to say.
I know, exactly. That's the problem, isn't it? It's like, yeah.
I just had a nice lunch. Can I talk about food?
Yeah. Well, you're not allowed to talk about food, the weather, lunch, golf, feeling ill or cricket. Is there music? Anything left in your life? Oh, music.
Guitar,
yeah,
no, playing.
That's true.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. So I listened to a Shop Talk podcast for the first time in ages.
Yep.
They're good.
You told me that the other week.
Yeah.
Obviously not knowing really just made it up.
No. Well, no. It's been a while since I listened to them again, and they are very good. It was a really interesting interview with the lady whose name escapes me. I apologise. Who...
That's a funny name.
Yeah, I know. That'd be embarrassing, wouldn't it? Hello. My name escapes me. And I apologise. Who trained as a... Went to, like, Harvard Business School.
Right.
Went and become a venture kind of... No, one of these... What do they call them? The banker types. Investment banker.
Okay.
That's it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then became, like, an accountant for a SurveyMonkey. And then one day decided she wanted to retrain and become a developer. And it was fascinating. It's like, right, I'm not going to do accounting anymore. I'm going to be a developer.
Crikey.
I know.
Who does that?
Well, she does. And she did it really well. And she went on, it was really interesting, because she went on like a 10-week intensive training course to learn how to do it. Which is really weird and alien in my view, you know, that you can go and just be taught how to be a developer, because of course I come from the school of learning it as I go along, also known as making it up as I go along. So yeah, and that's how she did it. It's really interesting, actually. Very fascinating. So,
yeah.
So that was good.
I mean, I've often thought to myself, I wish I knew how to code.
There you go, you go 10 weeks.
But I'm not going to do it.
No. Your level of commitment is not as high as hers.
Well, I don't know, maybe if I wanted to be a developer, but then people want me to do other things.
Well, that's the story of my life, isn't it?
No, I mean.
No. So, what else can I tell you about? Went to go and see Do Tricks this morning.
Right.
With Rob Borley and his little crew. And they've just copied our barn.
Except
they've got a drawback that their barn is on a working farm.
Ah.
With a lot of very smelly pigs.
Yeah, that's not so nice.
And they've got really low beams in their office. You know, it's lovely. It's kind of very much like the barn where we used to work. Mm-hmm. But with much lower ceilings and really low beams, which they've had to cover with carpet because they keep walking into them. It's so funny. It did make me giggle, that is. So that's what else I've been doing. And I went to... What else have I been doing? So you don't need to know about any of this, don't you? I went up to do an internal conference with a big publishing house and shouted at a load of marketing people. So that was fun too. I have a good life.
You do.
I just waltz around telling people what to do.
Yeah, next week you're going up to see yet another Scottish university for a chat.
There must be... We must be running out now. Are there any Scottish universities we haven't gone and had a chat with?
There are quite a few. Probably, he says. Maybe.
I'm really big. We haven't done any work with Dundee, have we?
No. Oh, yes, we have. Years ago, yeah, we did a very small piece of work with Dundee. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Damn.
There's another one in Aberdeen that I can't remember the name of.
Is there?
Was it Harriet Watt?
So what we've done, we've done Aberdeen, we've done Glasgow.
We've done them.
We've done them. It's like notches on my bedpost, women I've slept with. We've done Aberdeen, Glasgow, Highlands and Islands, which we're going to hear from later in this show. Strathclyde.
Stirling.
St. Andrews, who I'm going to meet next week.
Going to eat.
I'm going to eat. Just don't go there, Marcus. So it makes perfect sense, doesn't it? A web design agency on the south coast of the UK specialising in institutions in the Highlands of Scotland.
Well, they're not all in the Highlands.
Yeah, well, Duncan is, so we're going to talk to you today.
True.
So it's a weird old world. So that brings us on to what we are talking about today. So we've got a couple of interviews. We're talking to Duncan from the University of Highlands and Islands.
Yeah.
Who is actually one of our clients. I think, is this our first client that we've done on? I've forgotten who we've covered in the series so far.
No, we spoke to...
We spoke to Laura from Chelsea Pension. And I suppose Matt Curry was a client a long time ago, but
And to be honest, even though Duncan is essentially a client, we haven't done any work with him for ages.
No, that's true.
It's not like it's something that's
nepotistic.
It kind of is.
Well, only because you like to go drinking with Duncan.
Yeah, dangerously.
When he is Scottish.
Scottish likes whiskey. He actually collects whiskey. He has like 1,000-pound bottles of whiskey. He buys and sells it,
I was going to say, because I don't imagine, he can afford to have many £1,000 of, working in higher education in a web design team isn't the way to make a fortune, is it?
It's buying and selling expensive that probably scotch is probably the way.
Absolutely. So we're talking to him, and then our featured project is from the World Wildlife Fund.
I probably ought to actually have a look at
which
this.
Which is quite interesting. So that's going to be a good one as well, because very similar themes that come out in both, which is going to make an excellent show. So unless you've got anything else to talk about outside of that long list of things I banned you from talking about, shall we move on and listen to our interview?
Warm in here.
I think that borderlines on talking about the weather.
Yeah. Oh, my throat hurts.
That's definitely talking about being ill. I'm not giving you any sympathy, because you didn't give me any sympathy when I was ill.
No.
And I've probably given you this. Although it's more likely from your wife, isn't it, truth be told.
She was just as bad as you were, so I kind of, I think it probably was her.
You snog her while you don't snog me.
Which is, just even saying it, Paul,
is wrong, is it?
Quite horrible.
I've lost you now, haven't I? You're back into your notes, you're not paying any attention to this podcast.
Migrating from microsites.
Oh, you've found
I
the
found
show notes.
The notes.
Well done. Most people look up the notes before the podcast starts. You wouldn't get this kind of amateur behaviour on Shop Talk, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, well, how long have they been going, eh?
There are over 100 episodes now.
Over 100?
I know, amateurs.
Over 100?
I know. What, are we at 500?
No, I think we're probably...
600?
300?
3,000?
I think we're at 350.
Is that all?
That was just based on we're on our ninth...
Ninth series,
and I reckon we probably average 12 per series.
Maybe.
All right. Well, let's say it's ten, or let's say it's 100. We've done since we've been doing it, that, and I reckon we got to 230 odd. So we're now at 330 odd.
But I would argue that this isn't really a podcast anymore. This is just us sitting having a chat.
Cup of tea.
Yeah, because you're not even on your mic. You're leaning back. We're not talking about anything that's of any interest to anybody.
And how's that different to the previous episodes?
Okay, let's move on to the interview then. Here we go. This is the interview with Duncan from the Highlands and Islands. So joining me today, and Marcus, I always say joining me, Marcus. I forget to include you. Sorry
so
about that.
So rude.
I know it is. Rude. It's terrible, isn't it? So joining us today is Duncan Island from... Now, this is quite a mouthful, isn't it? Duncan Island from the Highlands and Islands. God, try saying that fast.
Well, it's the University of the Highlands and Islands. We will let you speak shortly, Duncan, honestly.
Charlie good.
Hello, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Good morning, gentlemen.
What's the weather like up there?
Gosh, starting with the weather, are we? Currently we are overcast, but otherwise in quite good order.
The whole area where you guys are is just gorgeous. The nicest place on the planet when the weather's good.
That's it. That's why I moved here.
Yeah. Absolutely. So where are you based now? Where are you living?
I'm living just outside Inverness, and my office is based in Inverness. So I'm looking out a window here at the River Ness flowing past the office window. Very nice.
Oh, I'm so envious.
It's quite lovely up there. I did enjoy my trip last January.
When IWMW, which is a big conference, higher education conference, was up in Aberdeen, I took a holiday off of the back of it and went to Kingairloch, that kind of area. And it was, and we had honestly 2 weeks of gorgeous sunshine, and it was the most incredible holiday I think I've ever had, other than the Maldives, which I like to mention at every interval.
Oh, we like to compete with the Maldives at every opportunity.
Talking about holidays, we will get onto the questions, but you went to Cape Verde recently, I believe.
I did go to Cape Verde, Islands, Boa Vista. It was tremendous.
I was there last week.
Excellent. Were you skiving or were you there with purpose?
No, just skiving. Well, holidaying, I think is the proper term.
I see, right.
Which hotel did you stay in?
For crying out loud.
Yeah, Paul's just going to feel left out now. I was in the Royal Decameron.
I know that one. We walked past it when we went there last year. But yeah, we were around on the south of the island this year. But yeah, highly recommended to anyone listening. Gorgeous place.
Yes, definitely. Do it.
So anyway, Duncan, dragging it vaguely back to what we're supposed to be discussing. So you work for the University of Highlands and Islands. Tell us a little bit about your job and what it is that you do there.
Ooh, a little bit. That's right.
Or a lot, if you want. It's fine.
We'll see where this goes. The university is made up of 13 colleges and specialist research centres. So my role encompasses looking after the main university website. Mm-hmm. But given we're a partnership, I also look after 10 of the websites belonging to the specialist colleges and research institutes.
Wow.
So I'm looking after a full HE website and a lot of input on 10 FE or specialist websites. So that's a little bit different from the kind of typical faculty department main university structure. So that's been quite interesting.
So so how long have you been with them? Because it's not that long, is it?
Not a huge period of time, I think a year and a bit now.
Wow.
Yeah.
You've achieved a lot in that time because the whole site's been completely redesigned and restructured.
So yeah, I was quite lucky. I think the folk who were in the role of web manager was a new one for the university. They've typically had a marketing manager who took on a number of roles. And just as I joined the university, the web was split out into its own team, which was quite nice. So I was lucky enough to be building on work that previous incumbents had done. They had brought together the design through a project called OneWeb for a lot of the partner websites. So the main university website and the majority of the partner websites looked like they were of a family and related. So what me and the team have been doing is continuing that work, and we've also been trying to make some specific impact in the area of recruitment.
Okay.
Because that ties in with us. We're Scotland's newest university. So we've got some awareness raising and some profile raising to do, and recruitment is clearly a goal. Obviously, every university is interested in it, but in particular, we were given extra funded places by the Scottish Government, so we had to make sure we made best possible use of those.
Absolutely. I think a lot, it's the goal of every university. Some of them lie about it, mind, don't they? Some pretend that they don't really care. They've got far too many people, far too many applicants. I think there's a bit of snobbery in the higher education community about recruitment, which always makes me laugh, but there you go.
It's an interesting issue when you focus right down and say, we are going to concentrate on recruitment. I think in a number of institutions, then that would certainly be contentious because there's a strong argument to bring forward other audiences for the website. Mm. So it's quite refreshing to be given that brief.
Yeah, absolutely, because so often with university websites, they're trying to focus on so many different audiences at the same time, and that can be really, it's one of our biggest frustrations working in the higher education sector is balancing all these different audiences. But working with you guys, it was such a clear brief, in a sense, that there were these fundamentally two audiences, weren't there? There were the local audience and then the broader audience, but it was all about recruitment, which is just great. It was really refreshing. So what have you, over the kind of year and a bit you've been there, what do you think is the biggest challenge that you faced?
I think there's maybe, there's different challenges. The obvious one of starting in a new organisation is catching up and working out how the organisation works. Mm. A particular one for me, I've always taken an interest in the technical aspects of running the website, so I've been closely involved with bits of HTML and bits of CSS and bits of content management system. So coming into an established content management system that I knew nothing about, I personally found quite difficult. Mm. That it was Plone and not a commercial product, I found made it harder, because getting the documentation and help is not as straightforward as phoning up a help desk and getting direct support. So that was an interesting learning curve for me.
So that's an interesting factor that you raise there. This whole thing of kind of open source versus commercial. You, from your point of view, then actually a commercial product is nicer because the support is easier?
I'm not sure if that's it. I'm lucky enough that the commercial products I've been involved with, I have tendered for and I have implemented.
Okay.
So I've had training from the ground up.
Yeah.
I've grown up with them. So I think that, if you will, in that argument, it gives the commercial product an unfair advantage. Had I grown up with this system, I may not have found the learning curve so steep, but coming into it established and running, and some of it being, it runs very, very differently from other things I've encountered. So it was a very steep learning curve for me.
Cool. What then, so that I can understand is a massive challenge. What then do you think is the most important thing you've learnt over the last year? Because, I mean, you've been in higher education for a long, long time. So, but this is a very different kind of institution for you, and I wonder whether there were any specific lessons that have come out of that, or ways that you've had to adapt.
I think the most important lesson is one I probably learned earlier on in my HE work experience, but it certainly remains true here. And I think that's one of incremental change. I think you will go start raving bonkers if you try and fix everything at once and do the big tasks immediately. I think trying to improve little bits everywhere all the time is much more realistic and much more practical. Mm. And can deliver ultimately the results you want. I think if you were to focus on a major project and only that project, then the nature of the beast within a larger organization is that will take time. There are some things I can go back to my desk and I can do now, and it will have helped a user, or it will have helped a colleague, or it will have moved a particular goal forward. And that's quite difficult when I think typically you're taught to get on with it and finish the complete task, do everything. I don't think that really applies to large websites. I think you've got to nip away all the time with incremental stuff.
Absolutely. I mean, that seems to be a reoccurring theme with the people that we've interviewed so far, is that ongoing development is absolutely crucial for success.
Yeah, I think it's interesting for the members of my team as well, because you can get drawn into business as usual work, so you're always doing that little task in the content management system, and you're always changing that bit of HTML, and you're always chasing that person for content. It's quite nice for them to say, oh, well, why don't we just embed the video better on that page? Why don't we do something we've never done on that page? What if we did it that way? And it gives you a chance to keep skills up to date and to make sure folk are getting a variety of work under their belt and not just going on to a treadmill.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, kind of changing tack a little bit. One of the a big part of the audience that listen to this podcast are web design agencies and freelancers and people like that. And one of the things I'm doing is taking advantage of interviewing all of these clients to try and find out what it is that clients look for when hiring a web design agency. What are the key factors that influence that decision? Because I think as kind of external people, you're all a bit of a mystery, you clients. We don't really know what the hell it is that you're after. So I'd be interested to hear your perspective on it.
I think there's different angles on it. One of the, in this particular sector, one of the things that drives almost everything is budget. Is there any?
yes.
And if there is, then what do we spend it on? And is it appropriate to spend it on X, Y, or Z? So in many ways, I'll answer your question with a negative. In the first instance, what we want is not to be cold called.
Right.
There is absolutely no point phoning me up and saying, hi, we're brilliant, we do shiny stuff, how about it? My response is, well, you're not in my budget, you've had it, there's no point talking to me. You cannot get into my consciousness that way. You're just annoying me in my working day.
Yeah.
So it's to somehow draw our attention to the organisation and the products and the wares and the personnel. You're thinking, oh, that's interesting. If I come back to that, I might well give those guys a call. And that's, for me, what we're looking for is expertise. Can you do something I can't?
Yeah.
Whether that's telling you've spoken on and you know fine well that if a third party tells your management structure something, it's gospel, and if you tell your management structure something, not always the case. So expertise is the thing. We're looking for somebody who knows what they're talking about. It's perhaps talking about something that's coming soon, that's not been done yet.
Mm.
Somebody, I mean, cost is clearly going to be in there. If we're coming for £20,000 worth of work and someone quotes us £40,000, then it's not going to work.
Yeah.
But someone might come back and say, well, you've asked for this. We can't do that in that budget. Here's what we could offer you. That an alternative can be welcome, although it will depend on how we've asked for the quote, because various tender and procurement processes have to be followed.
Oh, yes.
You know them well.
Yes, we do, yes.
Living procurement processes.
Another recurring theme there about the third-party expert, in inverted commas, being seen as gospel to senior management. That's, I think, pretty much everyone has said that to us as well that we've interviewed so far.
I'm fortunate that that's not a situation I've yet encountered here. I have a good dialogue with folk that are coming with the requirements and objectives, and I think there's been a history of folk being able to deliver what's been asked for here, so that puts me in a very fortunate position that I can have that discussion with managers, and the advice and the suggestions are taken. So I'm very grateful for that.
It's, yeah, that's
a nice situation to be in. I think another thing that comes through is communication. When you're dealing with a third party, I have a working theory that universities can be some of the worst clients on earth, because we are quite big. I've started conversations with suppliers and said, we're going to be a fairly horrible customer in terms of certain things. You need to be prepared for that. We might take a while to get back to you. So don't tell us it's going to take you 4 weeks. If you're assuming that we're going to respond to every email, every draft, everything you send us by return, tell us it's going to take 12 weeks. Put that in there. So it's communicating openly about what's going to be happening, I think, is quite important. I do think we're all fairly different. Folk will be sick and tired of hearing how this is unique or that's unique, or we're very different. But I think the structures do change. So there's a reality, I think, that certain commercial providers will come with a package, a list of things that they do and that they're good at. It may be that package is not what the client needs in this instance. It needs to be tailored. It needs to be specific. So that's that dialogue early on is very important, I think.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Because you have to adapt to the sector and the environment and the client you're in. Makes a lot of sense. So, okay, the last question I want to ask you, which you've already touched on, which is, what's the next big thing for you guys? Where are you focusing over the next few months or year or whatever?
I think it's a statement from the school of the obvious. Mobile,
yeah,
small screen devices, other stuff that accesses our web content. It's clearly and obviously on the increase when you look at the statistics, or when you wander about the streets or drop into somewhere that's got Wi-Fi, there's any number of devices about. That's what brought us to work with you guys. It's something we are now going to have to expand, so thinking about things responsive and how to deal with that. And that's it's an interesting thing for me. I've had a wee scout around, and there's any number of people that will teach you about responsive or show you how to code and mark up in CSS. As yet, I don't think I found anybody that will discuss managing a responsive website.
Ooh, that's interesting.
There's a, in my head, and we could probably argue for hours over it, in my head, we're no longer talking about one design. We're talking about 3, 4, 5 designs that happen to be presented with one set of files. So on the face of it, there is an increased workload by default, and it's not, there's no economy of scale. It's, you've got 5 designs, so you've got 5 times as much design work.
Yeah.
Potentially.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from.
Testing, certainly.
That interests me. If I'm missing a trick, or if there's discussions around that, of course, it doesn't only touch on design and testing. It touches on your content.
Mm.
Do you need smaller images? Do you need bigger images? Do you do that technically? Do you need different aspect ratios of images depending what you're doing? Lots of little details all begin to come in. So I think that's another big thing is content. Can we crack it? I mean, it's a never ending. We all know there's not a single solution. We all know it's not easy. And we all know there's all sorts of things you can do to aid content gathering and maintenance. But I think that's what folk end up reading and looking at. So it's a big and important piece of what's going on.
Oh, absolutely. I can feel some blog posts coming on here. You know, it is very easy to look at it, responsive design, purely from a technical point of view. But like you say, yeah, there are so many other issues. Even copy, you know, because you're maybe reading on a small device, should the copy be as long? You know, are you going to read something of the same length as you would do on a screen? I think there's so much we still have to learn about how users interact with mobile devices. So it's going to be an interesting few years, I think, ahead of us with that one. So, yeah, really good. Thank you so much, Duncan. That was absolutely brilliant. It was really nice to have you on the show, and I think you've raised some interesting points that haven't been touched on by the other interviews we've done. So very much appreciated, and good luck with the site over the coming weeks and months.
Yeah, thanks, Duncan.
Thanks very much. Nice to talk to you.
Thank you.
Good, guys.
So I really enjoyed that. I like Duncan. I say this about every interview,
yeah,
don't
yeah,
I?
Yeah. Can we have one on that you didn't like?
Yeah,
Duncan. Then you can be rude.
He's a shithead.
You wouldn't say that to him into his face because he's really hard.
He is hard. He's got that look about him. Pete's just come in the room. Hello, Pete.
Hi, Pete.
Pete's come in. He's got a camera. He's taking photographs for our new website.
Yeah.
Because apparently once, before he became a project manager, he used to be like creative. When I first worked with you...
You were a designer. Oh, no, I bet my headphones have messed my hair up.
Why have you taken... Oh, you've taken the headphones off so you look vain for the photo.
No.
Nobody can hear Pete. You just have half a conversation. Yeah. And you don't know whether they can hear him because you've taken the headphones off.
Do I care? Not much.
Right. No, I'm not vain. Yeah. Don't drag me into this. Okay. So, yeah, the reason I thought that was a really good interview, there was a few things that came out.
Duncan's
from
very sensible.
He is sensible. Mm. Well, yeah, I'm sure.
No,
sure.
He is. He's really sensible. Is he? And he's really organised, and he gets things done. And
he does.
That kind of person.
Yeah, he is. I thought it was really interesting that the conversation we didn't quite get into about open source versus commercial. So there was a kind of half conversation where I was trying to pin him down as to whether he felt commercial software was better than open source, and he kind of fudged it a bit.
He's inherited a CMS that he doesn't like.
No, yeah. That's the truth of it. Yeah. But I think does anybody like their CMS unless they actually picked it? This is
probably
the big thing.
No one, yeah.
CMSs.
I don't like CMSs at all.
No, oh, don't start you on CMSs again.
Although saying that, I've been using WordPress for our new site, and that's been
does the job, doesn't it?
Getting on fine with it.
Yeah. The other thing we talked about in the interview, which I like, was this idea of working incrementally. Talked about nibbling around the edges, which I think is really, really true. I think large organisations have got this tendency of kind of creating these big projects, haven't they, which they kind of, yes, let's create some huge project that you know is going to take 5 years to complete and goes massively over budget and turns into healthcare.gov and, you know, the president has to apologise for it and stuff. But in actual fact, the way to get things done is Duncan's approach and keep nipping away at things. I thought that was really good.
Yeah, well, I've been trying to persuade another client of ours to approach their site redesign. Nice lunch that I mentioned earlier.
Oh, yes.
That basically, to take a more kind of step-by-step, an agile approach, if you like.
Yeah.
But, you know, work out what the priorities are, build something, test it.
Yes.
Build something else, test it, go back, fiddle with the thing you did based on the feedback.
Absolutely.
Which I think got the right response.
Good. Let's hope so. That'd be really cool. I'd like to do that.
No, this is too weird without my headphones on.
Yeah, see, I knew you wouldn't be able to cope with it. But the biggest theme, the thing that I liked most from Duncan's
interview...
Oh,
that's better.
And which brings us very nicely onto our feature project, is this idea where he talked about... you know, that he's not just responsible for the main site, but he's also responsible for all the individual further education colleges and how they've brought them all together with one look and feel.
Bringing them together, not brought them together.
No, really?
Trust me, really. You've worked in the HE sector.
I don't care. Yeah, which brings us on to this kind of whole subject of microsites.
Right.
You know, and you're having these big organisations that seem to have a microsite for everything. And it always really amuses me because, of course, it confuses the user a lot. It's costly to create and it's expensive to maintain. And I wrote a blog post about this a while back, which I'll link in the show notes, where I talk about the pros and cons of both approaches. I think a lot of the time, the problem with microsites, or really the reason microsites exist, is because the main template sites that are being built are not being designed in enough of a flexible way to be able to support the things that different content owners want to do.
Well, we've been guilty of that.
Absolutely,
You know, we've built campaign templates that kind of are totally reusable as long as you kind of fit within the framework of what's been previously delivered.
Yes.
But yeah, this is Chris's current sort of bee in his bonnet.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. He wants to be us to be delivering sites, certainly from a campaign point of view, so that you can effectively drag and drop your design.
Yeah.
He's probably not right on that, but certainly be able to kind of like have a menu of stuff
that
you can rearrange the order of. And
like, well, it's kind of Dan's be in his bonnet as well from a different perspective, that he always talks about pattern libraries and building pattern libraries rather than focusing on specific templates, and that's very much like it as well. And that brings us on to our featured project, which is a project that was done back in 2011 for the World Wildlife Fund, WWF. They're not called World Wildlife Fund anymore, are they? They're called WWF.
There's no notes in my notes, Paul.
Why, there are no notes?
It just says featured project, name, email.
Oh, website. It obviously has an update. Oh, no, it's because you've got to scroll across because it hasn't formatted it very
well. Oh,
there
it is. There it is.
So, there we go.
Oh, wow. Fernando.
Yeah. You know Fernando.
I do, yes.
Yeah, Fernando, well, we met him when he was working for the World Economic Forum.
Yes.
In 2012.
Yeah, probably about then.
Yeah. Well, he says so at the bottom. That's why.
It would be then, yes. Yeah.
But he, before that, was working with WWF and was involved in what was a massive global refresh for them, which you can see at panda.org, which is beginning to date a little bit now. I mean, this is from 2011. But what really caught my eye, and the reason that I wanted to focus on this project, is that they started off with 60 sites that before this project in 20 languages, right? Can you imagine? So a hell of a lot to organize. And what they did was create a package, like an opt-in bundle. So it's a very decentralized organization, WWF. So they couldn't kind of enforce this on all of the different parts of the organization. But they created this kind of really attractive opt-in bundle, which consisted of a CMS, a design, and support from a central team. And they successfully, like, delivered this new website, web design, to basically the entire WFF network by kind of just offering a really compelling package that people could sign on to, something that was flexible, that supported all the different things people wanted to do in the different languages that they wanted to do it.
I'm really trying to find one that has not the same design.
Yeah, I think it'll be a struggle. It'll be difficult to do. And I just thought it was really interesting because it's a great case study of why actually...
Found one.
Oh, you found one. Well done. Where is it?
America.
Oh, well, can rely on America to do something different.
I guess it's a more... I think it's probably a newer version.
Yeah, it might be. Yeah. Might well be. So I just find it... I love this because it's a great example of how you can bring consistency to the user experience and save a load of money, because in effect they saved the organization 59 redesigns, you know, across all those sites. You know, they're creating a consistent brand, a consistent user experience. And I love the way they got people on board as well, using this kind of package idea of, hey, you know, here's a package of resources that you can use and you can improve it. And he talks as well in the email he sent through on the subject about creating a framework, and that goes back to these pattern libraries and things like the BBC Gel framework, which we'll put a link in the show notes to that so you can learn a bit more around that. And what it comes down to for me is the way he sold it, right? So if you think about it, often when we I saw an example of this recently. Okay, I was doing some consultancy for an organization, and they'd written a brief to persuade the powers that be that they needed to do a redesign of the site.
Yeah.
And it was supposed to be a business case for it. And this business case was great. It said what we as web professionals would say. Oh, inconsistent user experience. Oh, mope doesn't work on mobiles. All the things that we care about. Yep. So it basically argued it, you know, from the user's perspective. But the truth is, the majority of internal stakeholders don't give a monkey's arse about the user.
Unless it's broken.
Yeah.
Unless what they see is broken, and then it's the most important thing in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that people are inherently selfish and lazy. And I don't mean that in a derogatory way. I think that's the way the world works, and there's a lot of benefits to doing things the lazy way. Especially when you're talking about coding, but that's another conversation entirely. They did at WFF, which I think works so well, is they presented it in terms of benefits that it provided to the stakeholders. You know, this will make your life easier. This will save you money. You know, it was about the benefit to them. And we need to get better at that, I think. We're really good at championing the cause of the user, but I think sometimes we really need to word it in terms of how this is going to benefit our colleagues and the people we work alongside. Otherwise, we just sound preachy.
Yeah, I was interestingly saying similar thing again this lunchtime, over my nice lunch.
Over your nice lunch, were you?
But, yeah, basically, that balance between business requirements and user needs.
Yeah.
And if you have to make a choice between the two, which way do you lean? Our recent experience with working with Cindy about the fact that their user requirements are very narrow, really, and very simple to deal with, and we've done that, but the business requirements sometimes can actually get in the way of the user requirement.
Yeah.
And the balance is making sure that the user requirement is dealt with, but actually, you know, come in here and have a look at this as well. So,
but I also think when you're talking about a large organization, sometimes it's not even enough to talk about the business requirements, right? You know, if I was working for, I don't know, IBM, right? I'm a middle manager at IBM.
I can see you in that role.
I was heading in that direction once upon a time. You know, it would be very easy for me to go, you know, for somebody to come to me and say, oh, we want to do this, this, and this, you know, and here are good, solid business reasons. But if it makes my life more difficult, I don't really give a shit about what happens to IBM. Do you know what I mean? You know, when really this one little project isn't going to make or break IBM. I'm not going to lose my job over it. So why should I be cooperative? You know, and I know they should be, and there's good reason. The same way as people should care about user needs, they should care about business needs. I think, we need to be pitching arguments as what benefit are you providing this particular stakeholder? Mm. I often talk about this with CEOs because you'd think that CEOs in particular, you know, they would care about the business and stuff. But sometimes they're more, they seem to do these irrational things sometimes. And you think, why on earth are they making that decision that they are? You know, that's not beneficial to the business, but it's because... they're accountable to shareholders, or their bonus is tied up in something, so they need to meet a particular metric.
Yeah, yeah.
So I guess what I'm getting at is we need to spend as much time pitching our arguments internally about, you know, how and why we should do things as we spend in actually implementing stuff sometimes. It's a really interesting story of panda.org and how they went about rolling that out. And I love this idea of how you sell things. And I also love the conversation of microsites and what role microsites should. They should all be banned, basically. Except possibly, now I think about it, except for short-term events and things like that.
Okay, but even then they can really be incorporated into a...
They could be, really. Yeah. Really. I can't remember. I give some situations in my blog post, let me have a look, of where I thought microsites were acceptable. So I wrote this a long time ago, so it might not...
So it'll be all wrong.
It could be out of date. Let's have a look. What have I said?
I said wrong, he said out of date.
You have to consider the lifespan of the project. Consider that. If the content's only going to be around for a few months and a microsite may be appropriate, short-lived campaigns do not need to worry about the ongoing cost of maintenance.
True, but really it's just down to whether you want to confuse people with the main navigation of a site or you want to provide a different look and feel.
And I guess it's all right. And the other thing is, I say, ask yourself about the user journey. If the user is visiting the microsite after clicking on a banner ad, then you don't need to worry about them accidentally ending up on the main corporate site and dealing with all the stuff that's on there. That's pretty much what you're saying, isn't it?
Yeah.
It depends as well how flexible. This goes back to the flexibility thing, how flexible the main site is.
Mm. Yeah,
if the main site's inflexible, then you're kind of forced to do a microsite sometimes.
Yep.
And then finally, you've got to weigh the return on investment. If you invest money in creating an expensive microsite, will the campaign generate enough additional return to cover the cost of creating a site?
Well, yeah.
Yes.
But not everything's measurable in money.
Not everything I care about is. So do you have a joke to wrap us up
with? I do, because we ought to try and finish this show a little more quickly than last week's one that came in an hour and 15 minutes.
Really?
Yes.
Shit. Well, all you need to do, if this show comes out that length of time...
Just chop it in half.
What I was just going to say... Boom, I was just going to say, just delete all your bits. Or possibly the entire introduction section, one or the other.
Yeah, no problem. Anyway, a quick joke then.
Yeah.
I lost it. Where was I?
Oh, one job in the whole show you've got to do.
I've got so many here to choose from. Oh, yes. We've probably all heard this one, but I'm going to repeat it anyway. A grizzly bear walks into a bar and sits down. He says to the bartender, "Can I have a rum and coke?" Bartender says, "Sure. What? Why the big pause?" Bear says, "Oh, these. I was just born with them."
Oh, that's terrible. That's a really bad one.
What do you get when you throw a piano down a mine shaft?
Go on.
A flat minor.
Okay, you can stop now. That's quite enough. See, now Shop Talk don't
That's
have a joke.
Good though, isn't it?
That was quite good. I did quite like that one. They have sound effects. We have jokes. Take your pick. Next Friday, we'll find out which is the best podcast at the Net Magazine Awards.
Yes, yes.
Which is by far the most fair and balanced way of deciding anything. So not. I hate award ceremonies. I'm just going to go get outrageously drunk and then storm out when we don't win.
Really?
That's my plan.
Okay, I'll be filming.
I'm going to turn the table over.
Yeah, poof, like that.
That would be brilliant.
No respect.
Yeah. All I've put into this industry. Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm going to do.
I'll just sit there and look embarrassed.
Yeah.
Anyway, we can stop now.
Right, okay. So, thank you very much for listening to this week's very rambling show, even more so than normal, I would guess.
Yeah.
And we will be back again next week when we'll be talking about other stuff.
Bye.